welcoming back to the show and right back here in the studio, Sean Latch from the Versant Power Astronomy Center and the Jordan Planetarium. Nice to see you, Sean.
Good to see you.
I don't think we've seen you since eclipse madness.
Yeah. It was kind of a little bit crazy there with the eclipse, but survived and catching a breath after all that fun.
Very nice.
So it was good. We won the weather lottery. No one can complain, you know. It was great. And folks seemed to really enjoy it. So, yeah, it was good.
That worked out well. And everybody that was up there in Jackman sounds like had a phenomenal time. And, everybody around, all around the state, we were the place to go in the whole country. And it worked out awfully well.
We really were. I mean, even PBS National called me like a day or two before. And they're like, so the weather's not looking good here in Texas. Can we come join you? And I'm like, sure, why not? So it was nice. And, we had working with the town of Jackman. They were really wonderful. And, we ended up with 15,000 people in Jackman. They normally have 800. So it was quite amazing. But we worked with them for about a year. And, Heidi Dion up there, their town manager, I think she also retired after that. They were really, really wonderful to work with. And in particular, of course, I think it was good for them too, because they hadn't had the winter weather. And so, in terms of tourism, it was a really big boost. Because they didn't have their normal, snowmobile skiing, snowshoeing and all that season, just because the weather wasn't, we didn't have the winter like we normally do. So it was good.
And may not for a while, the way things
are going. Yeah, I was going to say, and right now, So that was good for him.
Excellent. Yep. So here we are getting ready to turn the page soon on a brand new month of July and some cool things coming up. You've still got this Friday, right? One more chance to see 5,000 Eyes, Mapping the Universe.
Yeah, this is a program that is really a lot of fun and sort of one of my areas of interest, which is large-scale structure of the universe. When I worked out in Hawaii, spent a bunch of time working with some of the astronomers on these large-scale surveys of galaxies that look at where the galaxies are and sort of the overall, structure. And this program is sort of an extension of it. It looks at a new instrument that has been in operation for about a year out in Arizona. And it is a really incredible instrument, the way it can look at 5,000 galaxies at a time and map their distances and their spectra in a variety of ways. So that program is Friday night at 7. It's our final show. So if you haven't had a chance to catch it, do come out and join us for it. And should be fun. And one of those programs, like I say, that is one of my personal areas of interest. I love talking about galaxies and some of those biggest items in the universe, if you will.
And we've got a couple more chances too this week to see some of the summer programs, including tomorrow, Worlds Beyond Earth.
Yeah, Worlds Beyond Earth is, of course, one of our summer matinee shows. We started off those a couple weeks ago, Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays at 2 o'clock with a whole variety of changing programs. Worlds Beyond Earth is a great program about the solar system. Takes a look at each of the planets viewed from spacecraft and some of our recent missions to those planets. And even just today, there was a really nice article about JWST looking at Jupiter and seeing some really interesting cloud features. So again, our solar system is constantly evolving and there's always something new with it.
Let's talk about what's coming up for July. Brand new program starting up on Friday nights, Moonbase, the next step.
Yeah, July is always our month about the moon for some reason. I don't know why. No, but anyway, it is our month that we always celebrate the moon in some way, shape, or form. Moonbase, the next steps, basically takes a look at the plans for what will happen after Artemis. So Artemis, of course, is hoping to return humans to the moon, but this is looking at, what will we do long term? So looking at, setting up both radio telescopes there to observe the universe in radio silence, because the moon will block, some of the radio shadow from Earth. We look at, the possibility of colonizing it, some of the challenges and benefits of doing so, and look at the way that really lunar exploration is looking to go forward, which is, using a variety of commercial partners in addition to NASA. So, NASA is, of course, very important, but we're also working with other agencies like ESA, the European Space Agency, but then also commercial partners as well. And there's already been some, precursor missions on that side to get that started. So this is a really nice program to take a look at some of those. And, we also, talk a little bit about Jessica Meir and our connection to lunar exploration going forward, too, keeping our fingers crossed that she'll be on again, Artemis 3, which will be the first one to land on the surface.
The Sunday shows in the month of July, 3-2-1 liftoff.
Yeah, so that program, again, sort of going on that idea of the moon and rocket science. You join Elon the hamster and 8 of 12, a robot who falls to Earth, and Elon's got to figure out how to get her back to her ship and tries a whole variety of methods and finds out that rockets are the only way to do it and figures out how rockets work. And it's a great program for kids. They really get into it. And of course, having that hamster in and doing a little bit of rockets are kind of fun.
And a little Pink Floyd for the month of July.
Yeah. What would it be without Dark Side of the Moon in July? That's sort of a standing show in July right now. This is that special 50th anniversary program we brought in last year. And again, it has some really incredible imagery set to the full album. And so for Pink Floyd fans, you know, it's worth checking out.
And matinees throughout the summer, every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 2 o'clock.
Yeah, we change titles every day, so there's always something different. The first we have Cosmic Colors, which takes a look at color in our universe, sort of a good family show. Secrets of Gravity, which is sort of geared for middle school students on the third. Rising Star, South African Journey, that's sort of a more general audience show. And so we kind of go throughout, and we have different topics. So I tell folks, check them out, to make sure that you're coming to the appropriate one for you. I've had occasion where folks will show up and they're expecting a kid's show and it's been an adult one, or, you know, vice versa. So I tell folks, always check the calendar and the website, and you can see, because all of the titles are listed there, what shows and sort of what the age range is they're geared for.
And what's up in the skies? What we get to see in the month of July?
Yeah, so we've got some interesting planet action right now. In the morning sky, we basically have Mars, Jupiter, and Saturn are in our morning sky. In the beginning of July, Mercury and Venus we're going to start to see back in our evening sky again. Venus, beginning of the month, really low, but it will gain over the month, and by the end of the month, it'll be a little bit higher up in the western sky after sunset. There's also this interesting star in Corona Borealis. So about every 80 years, this star flares up. It's a type of nova, not supernova where it blows up, but it flares up because it's a binary system. And it should, in theory, if it goes on schedule, be happening sometime between this summer and this fall. Now, Corona Borealis is a constellation. It's a minor constellation. It looks like the letter C, but it is somewhat distinct. If you follow the handle of the Dipper, you make an arc to the bright star Arcturus, which is in Bodies. And Bodies looks like an ice cream cone, and little C on the side of it looks like a smile. That's Corona Borealis. And I tell folks, so you're going to want to be looking for the star in Corona Borealis that, again, about every 80 years or so, it flares up and becomes pretty bright. It's normally sort of, you know, visible to the unaided eye as a relatively faint star, and it'll get a little bit brighter. Not bright enough to, you know, light up the sky during the day or anything like that, but will be brighter and will be noticeable. So hopefully, you know, like I say, it should be happening sometime over the next few months. So it's something to take a look at.
We've been talking with my son recently about space and solar systems. How many solar systems are in our galaxy?
So that's a really good question. We currently, you know, we first discovered planets beyond our own solar system in 1991, planets going around other single stars, if you will. And the number right now is up to over 5,000 of them that we know of. But right now, when we look at stars, we find that most of them, in general, probably 85 to 90% probably have planets. So if you figure there's, you know, 200 billion stars in our galaxy, that could mean that there's quite a few of them out there. In terms of things. Now, the bulk are hot Jupiters and things like that, so they're not going to be, you know, necessarily places for life, but there really are a lot. And again, we think that the bulk of stars, probably, you know, the leftovers from their formation, there's quite a good number of planets in terms of our overall galaxy.
And am I right that our solar system is a bit unusual in having just one sun?
Well, that's another question. So for a long time, basically, planets going around a double sun, like Tatooine in Star Wars or things like that, were thought to be in science fiction only. And we didn't think it could be stable enough to happen. We have discovered a few of those, not a lot, a few of those, where there are planets going around, a dual star system or even a triple star system. I think there's even been one or two of those that have been discovered. So that number is relatively minor at this point. We think that now the bulk of stars in our galaxy tend to be double or triple, but with planets we've only found a few of those in that regard. So it's, you know, one of those sort of six dozen one way, half dozen other in terms of that. So we think that a lot of them have, you know, planet, most stars probably have planets based on what we found, But with the ones that are going around multiple star systems, we've only confirmed a few of those. I should say confirmed in terms of, you know, being there yet. But who knows? We'll probably find more as we go.
And when we think about our own solar system and the size, it's hard to comprehend the scale. I mean, when we see it in a science book, and I think the old models that we used to have in the science classroom, even the big one up in Aroostook County, can't quite capture the vastness of our solar system. And we know how long it takes to get to Mars, but my goodness, the distance from Mars to the outer planets, almost hard to comprehend.
Yeah, it's one of those things. You know, the inner planets are all relatively equally spaced between, you know, Mercury, Venus, Mars, Earth and Mars. They're relatively equally spaced. But when you think of going to Mars, it's probably about 8 to 9 months one way, a year and a half on the surface till they line up again so that you can launch back to Earth. So it's going to be a 3-year mission, basically, to go and return from Mars. But when you move from Mars, which is at 1.5 astronomical units, out to Jupiter, which is 5.2, you're more than tripling the size of the solar system. And then when you move from Jupiter to Saturn, you go from 5.2 to a little over 9. So you're almost doubling it. And then you almost double it again to Uranus and almost double it again to Neptune. So you have, these distances are really, really large. It takes light from the sun 8 minutes to reach us. It takes light from the sun, you know, to reach that dwarf planet, Pluto, about 4 hours. So you can tell that there's a, you know, and that's the fastest thing we know of in the universe. So it is pretty amazing the size of our own solar system. When we look at other solar systems, though, they vary greatly. We have found solar systems, you know, where it's a multiple planetary system, like even 4 or 5 planets, and they're basically the distance between the sun and maybe Venus, because they're going around a small red dwarf star, which is even smaller than our sun. We found other ones where they're, you know, twice or even 3 times the size of our solar system. So there are ones that are larger as well, but they seem to vary a lot. And it's one of those things that's very interesting, you know, and trying to figure out, you know, the conditions on some of these worlds and what they're like is one of the big things going on in astronomy right now. Trying to look at, you know, their spectral analysis to see, do they have an atmosphere? Is that atmosphere something that could potentially support life? You know, all those things. So, but exoplanet science is really incredible, and there's constantly being new discoveries. We've even discovered a couple moons going around planets recently, and that's just really mind-boggling to see that we can actually, you know, detect those, because planets are hard enough to detect, but moons are even smaller and even harder.
And am I right that when we talk about the Milky Way galaxy and we think about our place in it, you have to think a little bit outside the box, because the idea that there's a beginning and an end, that it's like the state of Nebraska on a map, it's not quite the same thing when you're talking about a galaxy.
Yeah, I mean, galaxies are, they're a little more fluid in terms of the edges. I mean, you know kind of roughly where the, you know, where the edges of them are, but they typically interact. So our galaxy, you know, is roughly 120,000 light years across, roughly 12,000 light years thick. So it's basically like a frisbee, if you will. And we're 2/3 of the way out from the center of the galaxy in the suburbs, because you wouldn't want to be at the center. You got a supermassive black hole there, lots of radiation, not fun, not good for life. But then, you know, of course, there's the edges are more fluid in some cases. So that's roughly the size. But then, you know, there's sort of a bridge of hydrogen that connects us to satellite galaxies, the Magellanic Clouds. And then our galaxy is one of about 7 dozen in the local group of galaxies,
local,
right, which is the local group, you know, and then that's part of the Virgo supercluster, which is, you know, larger, and then you can keep going on out, you know, and in terms of things. And that's one of the things, you know, like DESI sort of looks at sort of that rough place of where we are, and then these surveys of galaxies. And even in the first year that DESI was looking, you know, it discovered more than 5 million new galaxies. And that's the other thing with JWST. When you look at most of the photographs or images it's taken, most of them are being, quote, photobombed by galaxies. They might be looking at something completely different, like they're looking at the Ring Nebula, but there's a galaxy in the background. You know, and it's just that that's one of the things. We just keep discovering more and more of them, and especially when you're looking at infrared, you're seeing these ones that are really much farther away. Their light's been stretched so far to that red area of the spectrum. So it is really kind of cool.
That's fascinating. Sean Latch, Versant Power Astronomy Center, the Jordan Planetarium. Sean, great to see you again. Welcome back. Hope the rest of your summer goes well.
Yeah, gearing up for, of course, our big 70th anniversary in October. We'll have more to talk about with that coming up in future episodes, hopefully.
Excellent. Well, we'll see you sometime late July or early August, I hope.
Sounds good.
All right. Thanks, Sean.
Thank you.
Sean Latch with us on Downtown.